We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. We know that the Falcons are on the field. It's the second week of OTAs, and Kevin Stefanski spoke to the media today, but he was not the only one. We've been waiting to hear from Tua Tagovailoa. Now, Michael Penix spoke last week, and everybody saw the video of him throwing the football. And look, he is still doing individual drills. He is, and I'm quoting Kevin Stefanski, where he needs to be. That is not necessarily an update on his health and his percentage of health.
Right.
They are not willing to tell us he is 100%. In fact, they've told us that he's not.
He's not going to be participating with 11-on-11 yet.
Correct. So he's not quite there. But let's hear from Tua Tagovailoa, because, Mike, as we talk about this potential competition, and we say that because it can't be one unless everybody's out there.
Right. I mean, a competition, both guys come into the arena 100%.
That's right.
That's it. Whatever the job is going to be.
All right, so a couple of things here. Tua talking about the pros and cons of learning a new system. Here's what he said today.
You know, I think it all has its pros and cons, right? You do love the challenge of it, but then there's bumps. There's more bumps in the road than there are in terms of, okay, that was pretty cool that I figured that out. I was in school growing up, so studying, you know, studying isn't my best forte. But what I would say is it's football. Football is universal. There's just terminology where certain coaches, depending on their background, who they were under, what they want to call a certain thing. One thing here was called different, you know, in Miami. But, you know, we're all trying to get to the same spots on the field, all trying to run the same plays in, you know, in a way. So.
That's how he describes learning this new system. And this is, again, Mike and I were talking about this. They're both on the same level here. Even though Penix was here last year, again, right. Stefanski comes in and Reese and Mike, they're installing all this new stuff. Alex is their quarterback's coach. He's helping them with all of this. But that's Tua's assessment on, hey, I got to learn this new stuff. But the terminology may be a little different, but I'm still probably familiar with it.
Right. And, you know, there's things at Penix Jr. and Tua. That's where when you talk about the competition – okay, both guys have something they got to do they haven't done a lot of. One guy's going to have a jump on doing that. See, that's why when I don't know how that becomes an anti-Penix thing. But anyway, it's just giving you the timeline where the good news for Michael Penix, if they really like Penix Jr., they want to see him because obviously it makes more sense financially. You got the control salary-wise, everything else. Because if Tua balls out, then you can have could be an expensive proposition.
It could be.
But again, let's hope that is the case, because that's a hell of a good problem to have. That means we won a bunch of games this year, right?
It is. And let's hope that's the situation for either one of these guys. It's Dukes and Bell. Let's hear Tua talk about how he's balancing giving support, but this is also an open competition.
I think you learn that as you go throughout your years growing up. You know, there's things that I wish I knew in 2021 that I know now, you know, and I think that goes for all of us. But competition has been around us our entire lives, right? For Mike, for all the other guys that are in that locker room, competition has been there. I guess the other aspect of it would also be how everyone would have been raised too. And so it's a competition. Don't get me wrong. I got to go out there and compete. MP got to go out there and compete. But for me, like it would just, I don't know, it would just be wrong not to help, like just with how I see things. Yeah.
Okay. MP is Michael Penix, by the way. and so he says, look, I want to give support, but I also want to go out there and be the best I can be. I'm all for that. Like at the end of the day, you're still on the team. You're still here. It's like, Mike, when Cousins was benched and then he kind of went and faded to the background, right? And then it became, you know, the Michael Penix show that first year of those last few games, and you're like, okay, Cousins didn't do anything to harm the team. He just, his role changed. And so
He also didn't want Penix Jr. there.
That's right.
In the first, now he said all the right things, and Michael said he helped. But, you know, in the bottom line is Kirk wanted to have three productive years here.
And didn't get it.
And because of the competition, also wasn't truthful about the nature of his injuries.
All right, I want you to hear this in regards to Tua, because to me, this says it all. Listen.
The team winning Super Bowl, I think that'd be amazing. Whether I'm the guy or whether I'm not the guy, I think that'd be unbelievable. And any way I can help make that happen, I'm excited to be here for that.
That's a team player.
Well, he does tell you what you want to hear.
That's a team player right there, Mike. Did you hear what he just said?
The team winning Super Bowl. I think that'd be amazing.
Exactly.
Whether I'm the guy or whether I'm not the guy, I think that.
He's it or not.
So are you being truthful with me right now?
What do you mean?
I mean, he's not just giving you that Russell Wilson
telling
you
exactly
what you want to hear.
I don't care how it happens. I just want to be a part of it.
I don't know.
And I'll do whatever it takes.
I want this team to win the Super Bowl.
That's what he said.
It's a good thing to say. It's a good thing. It's a smart thing to say.
Oren, does that not open your eyes?
That's so selfless, Mike. It's the idea of whether he's the guy or he's not the guy. He just wants to help bring a title here to
Atlanta. I can't wait till we meet Tua out at camp.
So selfless.
I can't wait till our first conversation. I'm going to ask Tua, do you think I need to lose weight? No, man, I think you're just right. Don't go changing.
And then the mic turns off and he's like, dude, you're a little chubby.
It's Dukes and Bell. All right, a couple more things. And by the way, we're playing this because we're giving fair and equal time.
Not balanced, but equal.
Equal to both guys.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah. And look, we got a great relationship with Michael Penix, and Mike knows what's up. He knows this is
He knows what he's got to do.
He knows what he's got to do. But we want to be fair about this. I don't want to spend all this time, Mike, on Penix and not being able to do this, that, and the other, and then he comes out and he's balling out. Let's give him an opportunity. But let's give this guy an opportunity, too. Let's give this guy an opportunity.
As a Falcon fan, I'd rather see Michael Penix Jr. do what he was brought here to do, what he was drafted to do. And look, I don't know why it went so weird in Miami. We discussed it earlier with the Coach McDaniel in the locker room and
what
all the weirdness.
What a team player he is.
Yeah, when he threw his team under the bus.
I don't remember that.
We got players not showing up late for a team meeting. Excuse me?
That's what leaders do, Mike.
Well, I think the leader needs to call that meeting inside closed doors and then say it, not go in front of Channel 10 down in Miami and say it.
Do you want to know how he's trying to learn these plays?
Listen, tell me how he learned it.
Tua Tagovailoa said, this is how I'm trying to learn these plays with the help of his wife.
I do flashcards. I do the flashcards with like the formations and with the plays as well. And then outside of that, as I'm studying the script prior to our practice day, like – I'm not necessarily as much a visual as like having to walk through it or do it. So I'd get up in my house and walk through it or I'd do it. And I'd have my wife read out the plays. So she has trouble. She has a little trouble with saying some of the plays. So just help her out with that. But it helps me, you know. So we've done in Miami too.
All right. There you go. Flashcards. Flashcards.
I love it. He's sitting there with his wife. They're talking about Spider 2. Why banana, Carl, right there?
She has a little problem with the playbook.
Now, as you guys know, we'll find out just how verbose Stefanski's playbook is. But some of these things, because you got to call the formation, right? Just the blocking pattern, everything else. There's so many aspects to it. So, yeah, it's a mouthful.
That is pretty good strategy, though, because if she's struggling, like he's no, you got to say it like this, and now all of a sudden he's remembering how to say it. So that's actually pretty clever.
You know what? I didn't, and it's funny because I don't know about you guys, but you know, you gotta learn how you study, right? And when we were in school, it took me many years to understand like how I needed to study for stuff. Once you figure that out, then you're pretty good at memorizing the stuff you need to memorize. But everybody just can't read the book, close it, and then they've got everything they need. So one other thing.
Hop to gun, trips right. Spider 2, wipe it at it.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's, like, again, that's when you and I were kids, it was like 42 dive. You know what I mean? It was like that was it.
Simplistic. Right. Sweep right. Right. Yeah. As far as Penix, again, just want to say this because Coach Stefanski spoke today. He said he's where he needs to be. He's stacking days every day. He's done a nice job. He's where he needs to be when it comes to rehab. That's still the first thing that they're talking about. This isn't about him throwing the football, even though he's out there. And then Tua, he said he fits well. He has no limitations on Tua. He was asked today at Mike about the concussions. And he said, no, we're not even talking about that. Like, there are no limits on him and what he's doing. But he also gave Tua a very good compliment. And I just want you guys to know, this isn't coming from me. When the head coach said that accuracy is probably the most important trait in a quarterback at any team in the league. And then he talks about Tua being one of the most accurate that he's been around, and he's got this innate ability to be accurate, Mike. And he said, yes, you can learn to be better, but some guys just have it. And he said today, Tua's one of those guys that has that in him.
God-given talent.
Correct.
And I said to Carl earlier, for guys who miss it, I know it's a long show, but years ago when Mike Vick was learning on the ropes, and it was Chandler was the starter, but Mike was coming off, you know, the bench, mopping up, And Fran was saying, you know, Mike's going to need to get more accurate. And he goes, the hard part is you can't really coach accuracy. It's something that guys really, you can improve, you can give mechanics. I think Mike Vick got better with Andy Reid in Philadelphia.
I agree.
I think Mike Vick was 10 times more accurate when he was in Philly and hitting guys in stride. Because remember, it'd be like Allergy would go 20 yards turn, or, you know, it was strange how sometimes the plays would develop a lot of improvisation. But in the case of Michael Penix Jr., he's got, you know, a great arm. Now, I looked at the scouting report. Carl and I were talking earlier. The scouting report talks about the low release point. Sometimes when there's pressure, the footwork struggles. These are all things that hopefully he's going to be coached up, as you brought up, all the great, you know, brain power they brought in. But that's in addition to learning a new playbook.
It's a lot.
A lot of stuff.
It's a lot. That's the thing. And you got to be, and by the way, you get 1,001, 1,002, 1,000.
Right.
Ball better be gone. That's what we're talking about. That's why it's the hardest thing to do when we talk about professional sports. Now, I would tell you hitting a baseball is right up there, but playing quarterback, man, with what you've got to process and the amount of time you have, Mike, it's no joke.
And remember, like we've talked about, we've already covered, you know, what the things that were working against Michael Penix Jr. last year, you know, the knuckleheaded play calling, the time that he actually diagnoses what the defense is doing, calls an audible, but the teammates miss it. Kyle Pitts, that happened to him once, specifically in the Berlin game. I saw Stefanski and Reese talking about they're asking Pitts to do some different stuff. They said they're really getting a great response. They love his work ethic. So Pitts is responding to this coaching.
Let's hope so. We need him, man.
Right. And that'll be another good problem to have if we're talking about what are we going to do with Pitts at the end of the year.
All right, guys, more to get to, including our Braves, who found a way to get it done last night. This series continues. Grant's going to stop by to talk about not only the game, but we got some questions about some personnel. Would they be willing to move on from a guy that they believed in? It's Dukes and Bell. So, Grant, whatever Money Harris did at the end of last season has really carried over. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Grant McCauley on the line with us. And Grant, I say that because the four hits last night, you know, two home runs. It just feels like that whatever adjustments, and we know there were a couple of things with his hands and whatnot that they did last year, but it's really carried over, and right now he's on a tear.
Yeah, it definitely has. And, I mean, you look at what Michael Harris has done over the first third of this season. He is reaching heights at the plate that he has never reached before. And that it projects itself quite well to a Braves lineup that we've talked about this for multiple years. I've been on record as saying, coming into every year, it seems like Michael Harris could make that jump to whatever that next level is for him. But what is the next level? We need him to stay healthy. You need him to be consistent. And he's had both of those things on his side. And he's making better swing decisions this year than I think he has in recent years, because especially last year, I feel like as he struggled more, the more he began to press. And then ultimately he did decide to make some adjustments and needed to make those adjustments, by the way, and they started to turn the corner. So he's stuck with it. He's had to grind it out and kind of go through some of the valleys that will happen during a big league season, maybe for longer than you want it to. But this year he is definitely reaping the rewards of the hard work, and he is elite when it comes to the hard hit rate. And he's also elite in the field. So you add all that up, I think you're looking at a National League All-Star playing center field for the Braves.
Right on. And Grant, another one of those sort of like teed up home runs, like just inches off the deck and takes it, you know, to center field. I mean, just, and you said it, he just looks so comfortable at the plate. Hey, real quick, I want to ask you about a guy who would be the polar opposite, Ha-Seong Kim. I know that he didn't have the benefit of spring training, but he does have the benefit of $20 million guaranteed. Two parts to the question. Did we outbid ourselves? What was the market for Ha-Seong Kim? Because he got waived by the Rays last year, then they picked him up, and he did well. And where does this go? Because he's just been awful.
Yeah, well, it is kind of, I will say, as I do with most things, you know, given the amount of time we've seen it thus far, not the start he'd want to get off to. Nobody's arguing that whatsoever. It is still a small sample size for him. And the thing that I think you have to remember about the Rays waiving him had more to do with the fact that that is a very, very shoestring budget franchise. So they essentially looked at, hey, if we can just get anybody to take some salary relief, he's missed most of the year. This just didn't work out here. And the Braves looked at that as opportunity cost to try to sell a very useful player, a Gold Glove caliber shortstop, to maybe being interested in Atlanta. And I do think that the multi-year deals, and I talked to his agent, Scott Boras, at the winter meetings, they just didn't materialize there. So Atlanta's deal and the offer for a one-year contract did make a lot of sense. Then he goes out and injures his finger. That was not part of the plan. So that, I think, is really what's undone Ha-Seong Kim's time in Atlanta here thus far. I think there's a lot of baseball left to be played. I think he is going to end up playing an important role and making some contributions. But right now, it doesn't look particularly good. And you kind of compound things by getting more than I think anybody could have reasonably expected from the duo of Mauricio Dubon and Jorge Mateo. I mean, Mateo right. was just kind of an add-on piece. And with Mauricio, I remember the initial reaction from a lot of Braves fans was, oh, no, we just got Mauricio Dubon. I guess we found our shortstop. And they just weren't impressed. And now you look at what Mauricio Dubon has done, and you got as many people, if not more, saying, how can you move to Mauricio Dubon? So it's kind of funny the way that thing works out. But it takes 26 guys over the course of the season, and I think that right now Ha-Seong Kim is going through it. But there will be a time where I think we look at it and see that he does have some value to this club. It's just right now it's hard to watch, and you know he's definitely got some things with this swing that he's going to have to iron out.
Grant, who concerns you the most in regards to the Braves being able to maintain how well they're playing for the long haul of the season? I know we talk about, you know, these checkpoints, right, where, you know, again, there's certain guys playing well, and then you're going to see somebody else step up. But if you were to say, hey, in regards to the Braves being able to maintain this level of play, what concerns you the most in those regards?
I don't know if I have, like, a single player that concerns me with their play, because I think ultimately, you know, they are going to go through kind of those lulls and different things. We saw Matt Olson cool off after an incredible first 6 weeks. Then he had a couple of weeks where it just wasn't going his way, and you kind of wonder, did he have an elbow thing going on? But apparently not, because last night he gets hit in the elbow, and then the next time he comes up, he hits a two-run homer, he feels fine, and he again shrugged off, you know, any concern about whether or not he was dealing with elbow pain. He said it's not an issue for him, so there's that. But kind of putting that aside, we still haven't seen the best from a couple of guys in particular. Austin Riley has had a better May, but a pretty dismal month of April for him, and obviously Ronald Acuna Jr. has not gotten off to that Ronald Acuna Jr. level start, and we really haven't seen the power there at all this season, which that's a little bit concerning. But I also have watched this guy long enough to know that there's typically a time where somewhere a switch gets flipped and things course correct for him. But as far as guys off to the hot start, Drake Baldwin, I think, was leading the way. Michael Harris was hot on his heels on the pitching side of things. Bryce Elder has right. been incredible, and he's been consistent. So seeing the consistency makes me less concerned about regression or, you know, the wheels falling off, if that makes sense.
Right. Strider got the win last night. It was a strange game because you know, Red Sox kept coming back. He was able to, you know, mentally compartmentalize this two solo home runs, but the pitch count kind of snuck up. What do you think of his outing last night?
Yeah, it was kind of a mixed bag, I guess, and I assume Spencer Strider probably would think of it that way as well. He gives up, as he said, immediate back-to-back home runs. It's not how you want to start a game, and he managed to kind of sort it all out. And then he got into the fifth inning, and Walt Weiss wanted to have a shorter leash with him. He did, but that leadoff walk in the sixth, then you put Didier Fuentes in. And there are a few things with Fuentes, and you have to remember, as we all do, that he's 20 years old, and you know he's kind of learning on the fly how to be a reliever because that's not really been his bag. And now you're in this place where, okay, well, that walk, you know, kind of opens the door, but a couple of more base runners, all of a sudden you're in a serious jam, and you've got to find somebody to get out of it, and that guy was Dylan Lee. But then the Red Sox, yeah, they were resilient. They pushed their way back in. Harris's home run ended up being the difference in that game because even Raisel Iglesias proved that, hey, a couple of balls that are hit where somebody's not can put him on the ropes, and he was able to slam the door. So it just – it was a little bit of everything last night, but I think for Spencer Strider, he did enough to, I think, check some of the boxes, but we still, I don't think, with the exception of that Dodgers start, haven't seen the Spencer Strider that we expect to see more times than not.
It's Grant McCauley, guys, joining us. Braves, again, 37-18, still remaining with the best record in the league. This series continues tonight. A little wobble with Iglesias, you're not concerned. He's been so good, right? 28 and the third scoreless before last night?
Yeah, I mean, he was pushing a scoreless streak that, as you said, was approaching 30 innings and dating back to last year. And after the first couple of 3 months of let's just call it the first half of 2025, he really did. He ditched that slider and figured out how to get things working. His changeup has been terrific for him. He's still got mid-90s heat, and he's now reintroduced that slider when he needs to. And he's just looked so good. So you're going to give up some runs. I mean, they're not any pitchers that I'm aware of. They go through the course of a regular work usage in 162 games and make their appearances and don't give up runs. But the important thing was he was able to bend and not break. And that's kind of the thing that, you know, a win is a win. Once it goes into that column, you're happy with it. You move on to the next day. And I think Raisel Iglesias has been everything the Braves could have asked for in bringing him back this year.
All right. As far as looking at Matt Olson, I just want to ask you, because I think, again, you know, we talk about how hot he was. He'll get back to being that, but Right now, would you call this a slump for him, I guess, last 13 or 14 games?
Yeah, I mean, he's cooled off some, but, you know, he showed you last night that, you know, when you've got Matt Olson up there in a key spot, he still has the ability to do some damage. And his one swing was able to cancel out the two homers early against Strider and get the Braves offense rolling again. I think, you know, everybody kind of needed a jolt, right? Because the Braves had not homered, and I think it was, what, three or four games at that point. And that's a big part of their offense. Doesn't have to be the only part, but you'd like to see it because you got a whole bunch of sluggers there. And it was a really, you know, quiet weekend against the Washington Nationals. Saturday and Sunday, they scored a combined total of, what, one run? So that swing by Olson was a pretty big one there. So I think he's capable of it. He is a guy that, you know, with that big swing that he has, once he gets it dialed in, he can get incredibly hot. But I think there are some times where just that little bit off can make a big difference in the consistency that he would like to have.
And Grant, we talked a few months ago about like J.R. Ritchie and Didier Fuentes. I mean, Fuentes getting more and more comfortable in that role. I know it was a little shaky last night, but as CJ said on the broadcast, kind of a big stage at Fenway with high pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's kind of what I was alluding to with the, you know, learning on the job to be a reliever. And, you know, as we talked about, I believe maybe a week or two ago when we were kind of sizing up some of the bullpen options for Walt Weiss, if you're only holding Fuentes back to use for 2 to 3 innings, okay, well, all right, you can't use him on a regular basis. If you've got Ronaldo Lopez out there to be held out for the 2 and 3 inning outings, well, you can't count on him either. All of a sudden, you're running a 6-man bullpen. And that kind of thing, especially in a stretch of 13 straight games that the Braves just played before the off day on Monday, can really put your bullpen into a tough place. So I think moving both of those guys towards the idea of, all right, we need to have some shorter burst, you know, appearances. And if you look at the arm talent, Didier Fuentes really has only one peer in that bullpen, and that's Robert Suarez, who has a 100-mile-an-hour fastball in his back pocket. Fuentes, it's incredibly good, and I think the secondaries are coming along, but you mentioned it, you know, you get into that big place or you know, storied park like Fenway against the Red Sox in a high-pressure situation. That's the first time he's facing stuff like that. So I think there is a learning curve that comes with it, but he's got the arm talent, and I think he's been able to show that he has the maturity to make the adjustments to continue to be a good weapon for the Braves out of the bullpen. Before yesterday, he came in with, what, 10 appearances and a 1.10 ERA in relief. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good run for a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah, it is. Great stuff, Grant. Bryce tonight, we'll see what happens, and we will talk about it with you at the end of the week. And, of course, Grant will be on from the Diamond coming up this weekend. So we'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks again.
All right, thanks, guys.
Cool. That's Grant McCauley. Real quick, I mentioned Olson going into last night. Going into last night, because he hit the two-run homer, and you're like, oh.
Bit of big power outage.
Yeah, man. He's hitting 160 in his last 13 games.
Yeah. That was first Jackson's May 10th, if I read it correctly.
Correct. Right. So when we talk about last night, it was a big moment because we needed it, and he needed it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd just be happy with, you know, Dubon at short. Or, again, you got other options. But, I mean, look, it was Grant said, they're probably not going to eat 20 mil. Let's hope Ha-Seong Kim finds his way out of this, you know. But he was batting 214 when the Rays put him on waivers last year.
All right, guys, coming up, Kirby set the world on fire yesterday. And now we may have an answer with a bipartisan college sports bill proposal. We'll tell you about that. And the latest with our Hawks. There is Hawks news you need to hear. It's Dukes and Bell. Let's talk about a couple of things that are going on. One, Falcons and OTAs continue. This is week two, and Kevin Stefanski spoke to the media today. So did Tua Tagovailoa. We'll have more tomorrow, guys, as some of the coaches address the media as well. Guys that you want to hear from, including our defensive coordinator, Jeff Ulbrich. One of the things Brick did say today, Mike, is this is the best safety tandem he's been around.
Big time. I mean, we got some dudes, man, and you know, that's another contract. We were just talking earlier in the show about is this the preseason where, you know, Drake London gets his new deal? What's that deal going to look like? And, you know, I don't want to lose Jesse Bates because I still think he's super competitive. I mean, this one of these guys looks like he can play and be competitive at age 33, 34 and beyond, doesn't he?
It does. I see no fall off. The guy continues to make plays, and, you know, we joke with him all the time about, well, you won 4 games for us last year.
Literally. Literally.
I mean, a pick or stripped or whatever might happen. But, yeah, man, I think, you know, we got really lucky with the kid out of Notre Dame last year, and we didn't really know how good Xavier was. And right. then
get hurt.
Yeah, and well, no, and that, yeah. that's Billy Bowman.
But, sorry, Bowman got injured. Xavier Watts Xavier was also winning us, or putting us in a position to win games.
Picks, just being in the right place. So we'll hear more from Brick tomorrow on this and what they had to say about the O-line because Bill Callahan spoke. The other thing going on, Mike, is college football. And yesterday, can we play this for our audience, about Kirby talking about breaking away? This is the soundbite that everybody ran with yesterday. And Mike and I briefly discussed it because we were like, okay. But this is kind of the fallout. Now you've got other coaches commenting about, all right, what is the state of the conference? More importantly, what about football and how we're going to go about our business? And Mike said it. I think for the first time since Greg Sankey's been in charge,
right?
You have coaches not all on the same path. And that's okay. It doesn't mean, you know, Sankey's going to lose his gig. It just means like, hey, there's some disagreements about how things need to get done. Here's what Kirby said in regards to like, hey, we need uniformity across the board in college football. And if we can't get it, well.
But I've said this for a long time to our president. I've been a huge advocate that if we can't find rules that everybody plays by, then we should, you know, play our own. I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid to break away and say that our conference is strong enough to go out and have and play. I mean, like, if we could actually function and it financially would make our programs more stable and we could support things financially, I'm talking about all the sports, and do by our own rules, I'd be all for that. I've been to this meeting now 10, 11 times, and it's frustrating at times to say, well, we can't do this because of litigation. We can't do this because of litigation. We can't do this because we'll get sued. We can't do that. And we're just trying to do things for the betterment of the sport and the betterment of the student athletes. And that's not curtailing what money they make. I'm not advocating that they make less money. I'm fine with what student athletes make. I'm trying to make it where it's as equal and as comparable footing for everybody, and it's not a race to the bottom, as they say.
Said to Carl earlier, it's like basically taking over from Nick Saban as like the elder statesman, certainly the SEC, if not all the college football. Like what are you saying? Just how do we get there? You know, and by the way, the other thing that came out of Destin this weekend, this week, is, you know, how the coaches popped off about the 9-game schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And you just mentioned Sankey saying that, you know, some guys, Brett McMurphy had the story where guys saying they felt misled. John Sumrall hadn't even coached a minute in the SEC as a head coach. He was the one that said that. Then we get to, you know, the other aspect of all this is the new rule, not rule changes, but the laws we'd love to see passed to make, quote, football right. A lot of moving parts to all that we'll get to in a second. But Kirby's a guy that, like, he's a voice as a part of this conversation. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with this bipartisan bill they're trying to run up the flagpole. There's a lot of moving parts to it, but I think Kirby's – I wish that we had that czar. Remember that Saban was going to be the czar of football?
Yes.
I mean, it was a nice thought, right? You kind of need that. One guy, one vision.
I do. I just don't know who wants to take that on. Limiting athletes transferring, limiting athletes' eligibility to a maximum of 5 years. These are just outlines of this Protect College Sports Act that they're trying to get passed or at least get introduced to potentially go to both houses and be passed. You need legislation like this to really for it to be effective. And I'm not telling you that an executive order doesn't help, but you need real legislation that's passed by Congress to have it have the effect that it needs to have. And that's why this is interesting, you know, prohibiting former professional athletes from playing in college. That's that whole overseas, I played overseas, and now I'm coming right back over here and I'm going to play in the NCAA. They're trying to limit all this stuff and also do what's best for college sports. Right. And again, I said to Mike, I don't know if all this stuff sticks, but you got to have a starting point.
Well, I mean, for college basketball, a guy was in the G League, that's professional basketball.
That's right.
I mean, it's pretty much cut and dry, you know, and we talked about some of the other things that, you know, I think could potentially, you know, get us on the right track. Some guys don't like the idea of one transfer per your five-year period, and you only get 5 years. You're not, at your point, you're not playing until you're like 27.
But, Mike, I do. Think about Dylan Raiola.
It's a joke.
It is. One time to say, you know what, this is not the spot for me. I totally get. That's fine. Five spots?
No. No, and that's, you know, I know the COVID year was kind of, you know, created a unique situation between a red shirt where a guy could conceivably be 25.
Yes.
You know, still playing college ball. I mean, people used to make fun of when Florida State had Chris Winkie after playing minor league baseball all these years. Now that's like, that was like the norm the last couple of seasons.
It feels that way.
But the other thing is also, how would you pool all the loot? You know, all the money and the idea that, you know, Brett McMurphy reports the bill includes opportunities for schools to collectively pool rights. So the idea is everybody would be on even footing, but do the big dogs who are making all the loot want to help share the resources. I can't see that happening.
Well, look, the rich want to get richer, but now if you're going to do this and have an equal playing foot or playing field for everybody, that's what's got to happen. You mentioned John Summerall. One of the things they want to do in this Protect College Sports Act, it's Dukes and Bell, if it was to go forward, is also say, hey, Lane Kiffin, your team made the playoff.
You're coaching that team.
You're not allowed to leave right now. And I want you to hear how John Summerall, the new coach at Florida, addressed this question because he was at Tulane. And he said, look, if Tulane would have told me I couldn't have coached, what would you have done? Listen to what he said.
Coaches always say to control what you can control. In hindsight, should you have stepped aside at Tulane, or do you think you made the best decision?
I would have stayed at Tulane and not taken any other job. I was not going to leave a team playing for a championship to go coach another team. That's not in my DNA. I ain't built like that. Couldn't do it. I just couldn't. That's not a shot at anybody. Honestly, it's not. So if Florida or any other school that wanted to offer me their head coaching job was going to tell me the terms they needed it to be on, the answer for me was I can't take the job. Sorry. I just can't do it. Right. Because those kids had given me just too much. And it just was, I don't know, it wouldn't have been fair. Now, I went into my team meeting at Tulane when I let them know I was leaving. And I said, hey, do y'all want me to coach in the game or no? Like, hell yeah, you're our coach. So I was like, all right, I'll coach. But if they told me no, I would have gotten out. But they all were like, yeah, we didn't come this far individually. Like, let's finish this thing.
Right. And that's all we've ever said about Lane Kiffin. You know, I mean, we can all debate, you know, the LSU is sitting up here and Ole Miss will always be down here. But a lot of guys like and really vibe what John Summerall's putting down. You don't stab your team in the back the way Kiffin did. You could have said the same thing to LSU. Mm-hmm. I don't care what any – I'll argue. I'll die on this hill. Who are you getting over Lane Kiffin for LSU? I'll wait for it.
I'll wait. Yeah. And that answer from Summerall, and by the way, I really like him, by the way. I think Florida might be onto something here. We'll see. But I think they might have found the right guy. But I love his answer as well. What's up? Oh, you got something for us?
Yeah, so kind of the last hour or so, we got the coaches' meetings going on right now down there in Destin. Pete Golding, you guys know he's in the midst right now, I guess, of a tampering thing with Dabo out there in Clemson. Mm-hmm. Had a linebacker who he supposedly took a photograph of a $1 million contract and sent him to him like a day after he started up for Clemson. Pete Golding, at the center of this high-profile investigation right now of alleged tampering, has informed the NCAA he will, quote, expose rampant tampering in the sport if he is sanctioned.
Oh.
A person close to the situation told USA Today Sports.
Which would just be Lane Kiffin pilfering all those guys from Ole Miss, amongst others, but that would probably be on the top of the list.
Wait, is he threatening that if you do this to me?
You go after me.
If you do this to me.
Yeah, I'll name names. I'll burn this whole thing to the ground.
That's what he's saying?
That's what he's saying.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Some guys thought Golding's a bit of a loose cannon when they hired him. That was the knock. But, you know, he also...
If I'm going down, I'm going to take a whole lot of...
That's what I'll...
But, you know, he did, you know, win a couple of games and almost beat Miami, beat Georgia.
Yeah. All right. That's interesting.
This thing is bigger than Nino Brown, and I got to listen for it.
Bigger than Nino.
They were going to kill my mother. It was Akeem Akbar. It was him.
The brother from the bank.
The good-looking brother from the bank.
You know what? I kind of want to see this go down for Pete Golding. I want to see what happens. You going to do this to me? I want to see what he's going to do.
So
I'll expose all right, of y'all.
So if we take this New Jack City riff to the full conclusion, does Lane Kiffin hire somebody to be there? Idolater! You reap what you sow.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
And for those that hadn't seen New Jack City, please do. It helps you follow along with our program about once a week.
Hey, man, Hawks Mike signing general manager Ansi Salehe to a long-term contract extension and promoting him to president of basketball ops. As we said, it gives him control of all the basketball moves, personnel, and stuff like that. I don't think a lot changes for him. Guys, he gets input from Quinn Snyder.
Here to tell you.
So for Ansi, this is just, again, Mike said it, expands his titles and allows him to have a little bit more control. And look, this is a thing where now they're trusting him, right?
Right.
They're trusting
him. You know, and just, we said it earlier in the show, we get, by the way, I do think, and I think you'd agree with me, that this thing's coming to a conclusion on Thursday night in, I think the Spurs can... they could probably extend to 7, but I mean, if OK plays like they did, OKC plays like last night, I think this thing's a wrap.
Yeah.
But we saw Hardenstein and Holmgren, and you've seen all this athleticism and Ananobi. That's another thing we don't have, a guy like that. You know, we hope that Jalen evolves to be that guy, but we need some bigger bodies. We got to make some hard decisions. And as we said, I mean, I love CJ McCollum, but not for 3 years, right? Maybe even 1 year. He's not going to take that. You know, what are you going to do? Can you fix, by the way, if I'm on say, You definitely have this conversation with your coach. How are we fixing Reece Hoshea? You know, I mean, I know you say you had to preach patience. The guys take 4 years to develop or five.
Yeah.
But Reese Hoshea's got to – you can't even have a guy on the floor that's the first overall pick. That's got to be a priority on that, you know, the items of action for this team, right?
Yeah, well, he has to be more of a contributor next year. There's no debating that, Mike. I mean, you can't go into this part of his young career and, you know, we're in a major playoff series and this guy's sitting the bench. You can't
do
have
you
that.
Think Saleh thinks, and they maybe not say this publicly, that, you know, maybe we did some good things, but yet we may have to take a step backwards. And I don't want to hear that. I know you don't want to hear that.
No.
But the idea that, you know, let's invest in the right free agents. You can go get proven size and things you need right now and then still have your draft and let those guys develop on their own timeline.
Yeah. I think we hopefully are only taking steps forward. The only step back is who develops and how fast. That's the only from a developmental standpoint. But, like, if you're telling me from a player standpoint and what we're trying to acquire – we shouldn't be taking a step back. By the way, you bring up OG Anunoby, who's been a beast. This kind of tells you the maturity as far as, or the maturation process for guys. Oh, what do we have in this draft? We got the 22nd pick overall. Is that right? That is correct, right? 23rd? Mm-hmm. So you guys know who the 23rd overall pick was in 2017?
OG Anunoby?
Correct. It means he's been in the league, what, 7-8 years now? Now, Mike, look at his development. Look at where – and he's not playing for the team that drafted him. My point is this is that thing that happens where when he's drafted 23rd in 17, everybody's like, well, I think he's a good player, but I don't know. Now there's not a team that wouldn't take OG.
Right. I mean, look, the second round's a total crapshoot, but you've seen guys do it. Jalen Johnson was a mid-round pick. Mm-hmm. We've seen – you know, we know where he is now. The question for me is, like, you know – you don't. But point guard, big man, we've talked about this. You got Ace Anul. I had a dog fan earlier in the show. So what about Ace Anul? He's not ready.
No.
I mean, he's a bigger body, but he's still skinny, and he's still a guy that you wish, like, in a perfect world, he played 3 years at Georgia, and he came out NBA ready like guys used to. They don't do that.
No, they don't. We've got plenty more on the Falcons tomorrow, Braves as well, and, of course, we're talking about all the storylines coming out of the NFL. We're not the only ones on the grass. OTAs, a bunch of teams around the league, and a lot of stuff going on. We'll have it all for you tomorrow as we're chasing down some other guests as well. We got to get out of here, though. Turtle's got a full show. Big O, let's clear our throat. Hey, thanks to our guest, all online at Odyssey.com. Make sure you check it out. And you can stream the show, guys, Odyssey app. You do it, and we love it because we hear from people all over the country say, hey, I had to go here. I was on business, and I listened to you guys. So make sure you download the Odyssey app today. All right. Good to see you, Day-Day. Glad you're black, man. Back.
And black.
And made it back from Memorial Day. Big O as well. Stay tuned, as we said. Turtle Chris Thomas has you covered from 6 to 10. He's got a lot of stuff to chop up as well. Mike and I are back tomorrow, too. Mike Bell, clear your throat.
Hey, man, we were talking about this earlier. Sometimes you just got to know it, and you got to say, this guy ain't it. Hassan Kim, I got to see something, man. You're horrible, man. You're batting like 105. You're not doing anything right. It's one thing if you stink at the plate. You can at least be a really slick-fielding shortstop, and even that's a struggle. I'm just curious to see. Now, again, $20 million to eat is a lot different than eating Aaron Bummer's contract, but, man, they need to get some production out of this guy. Let's hope it starts tonight. He's starting. He's your starting shortstop in the lineup in Boston.
Have you seen this footage of Big Perk being held back at an AAU event? Apparently his son Mike was involved, and, you know, he said, look, I treat all my kids this way. To be honest with you, there was nobody in that gym that could have held Big Perk back if he really wanted to go berserk, because he's a very large man. But
look at the numbers.
Look at the numbers. I'm going to tell you, Mike, the deal with him is, man, he said, I protect all the kids the same way. That's good to know. I just didn't want to see him getting into one of those, one of those fights that went viral.
Right.
You know
what
I mean? Because it would have been Perk throwing people all out of the way.
Right.
Hey, man, if you love the show,
tell your friends.
If you don't,
you're that AAU coach that Perk wanted a piece of, and some poop came out.
Living just enough.